We're holding on Chaf Vav Omid Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. Actually 10 lines from the bottom, rather. We were talking about cases involving Mazik and Nizik and mentioning the point Adam Mor L'Olam. So now the Gemara is going to go through a whole bunch of cases where you have responsibility for a Nezik maybe considered as shared between two people. And what do we do about it? It sort of relates to what we were saying before. We learned about yesterday, for example, that somebody had a rock in his lap, which he didn't realize because somebody else had put it there, let's say, and then he fell, and then he got up and it fell, and various things happened. So now, in a similar vein, you're going to have two people are involved in a particular nest. So v'omer Rabba, zorak kli me'rosh hagag. If Reuven, who owns a keli, threw that keli off the roof, v'hoyu tacht of korem ha'ksosis, and underneath it on the ground were pillows and cushions. Now, why is he throwing it? Doesn't really matter for our purposes. Whether it's that he wants to make a hefker, whether it's because he's angry, whether it's because he's trying to save it, whatever the case. Oh, sorry, I skipped to the second one. The first one is Zorak. If Reuven, the owner of a keli, is throwing it off the roof, and as it's falling, somebody hit it with a stick and it broke. Potter, then that person who hit it with the stick is Potter, my timer, mona tvira tovar. Because what he broke was already considered a broken keli. Because in other words, it was going to break regardless as soon as it landed on the ground. So all this guy did is he broke something that's already considered broken. So at this point, it has no monetary value in particular. So therefore, he's Potter. V'omer Rabba, and Rabba says it related. Did Zorak kli me'rosh hagag? What happens if he throws off the keli from the roof? V'hoyu tacht of korem ha'ksosis, and in this case there are pillows or cushions underneath it, so it won't break. Ova'acha v'silkon, somebody else came and took away the pillows or the cushions. Oi kodem v'silkon, or even the person himself who threw the keli grabbed them away before the. Here we're talking about Zorak Kli would be it belonged to somebody else. In the first case, we're talking about that it was Reuven himself, the owner of the keli, threw it. So we're saying that that Shimon, who hit it with a stick, is Potter. Obviously, if it was Reuven's keli and Shimon threw it off the roof, then Shimon's going to be chayev for the damage to the keli, regardless of whether it landed on the ground or regardless of whether it was or whether Levi hit it. But now we're saying that if it was Reuven's keli, Shimon threw it off the roof, but it was going to land on pillows or cushions. But then somebody else, Levi, came and took away the cushions before the keli landed, so it ended up breaking. Or even Shimon himself grabbed them away after throwing the keli off the roof. Potter, then he's going to be Potter. My timer, why is that? Because when he threw the keli, pasuki mifsike, his arrows are interrupted, meaning, in other words, if we consider metaphorically, him throwing the keli as shooting an arrow at the keli. Well, since there are cushions underneath, then the keli's not going to break. So therefore, his throwing it didn't have the ability to damage it. Now, when somebody else, when Levi took went and took away the pillows, Levi is only a grummer. Levi is only a grummer who's Potter. Tosfos brings that actually the Rif learns differently, that it would be not grummer but garmi, which the nafkamina between that would be. The Gemara mentions in a few places that a person is chayev for garmi, according to the mayor, and the halacha is like him. If we consider that this is garmi, then the final halacha would actually end up being that Levi is chayev. However, in this case, Shimon would be chayev if Shimon himself is the one who removed the pillows because he threw it and he's the one who removed the pillows. If we consider that garmi rather than grummer, and there's different opinions among them showing him how exactly we draw the line between them. But anyway, according to the Rif, it would come out that Shimon, in fact, who threw the keli and removed the pillows, would be chayev, whereas Tosfos prefers to say that no, this would be grummer and everybody would agree it's Potter. Be that as it may, the point is, when he threw it, it wasn't capable, that throwing wasn't capable of damaging it, And therefore he's potter for it. And the fact that the pillows were removed afterwards, whoever removed the pillows is indirectly causing the damage, and therefore they're not chayev, and therefore they're not chayev either.
What's the difference between Garmi and Grama?
There's many different opinions among Rishonim how exactly to draw the line. That Ramban, in fact, wrote a whole kuntras on the subject called Dina de Garmi, kuntras Dina de Garmi. Among them are, there are many different opinions. We're going to talk about it actually in more detail later in the Masechta, Bez Hashem. But one explanation is that Garmi is a more direct is a more direct grama that effect that where you're doing something with the object itself, whereas grama is something less direct where you're doing something else which eventually has an effect on this. But it's not so simple, and there are in fact many different opinions among Rishonim and Achronim on the subject. So Bez Hashem, we'll get to it in due time. Va'omer Rabba, so now Rabba says he used more cases involving throwing things off roofs, but here we're not going to be talking about nizokin, here we're going to be talking about killing. So Va'omer Rabba, Zorak Tinek Meresh Agag, if one person threw a baby off the roof, Uba'ach B'Kibloi B'Sayif, and somebody else down below is holding a sword, and the baby landed on that, Rahman al-Itzlan, We could sit and ask ourselves, what are these people thinking? I mean, have these people been hanging around Hamas or something, Rahman al-Atlan? But as usual, as we said the other day, the Gemara is not right now interested in the motivations of these people. We're more interested in the fact is this case happened, or it may never happen. You know, we had the other day in Tanya, you can have cases in Halacha involving Loisa says, which never may happen, and we have to figure out what exactly looning those accomplishes in the Olam HaSel Yonim. But the fact is they are part of Torah, and learning them has an effect on such things, whether because it's Mevare Plibas Noigo or for other reasons. Anyway, so in this case, the question is, which one of them is Chayev Misa for the baby's death? The one who threw him off the roof, or the one who was holding the sword that it landed on? Tosfos points out that now there is a din that says that if a person kills a treifa, so here the Gemara says, and I say it's a subject of machloikas, Tosfos points out there's a related case where a person is a treifa, where a person has one of the 70 or so conditions that'll make an animal treifa, where if a person has them, he's also considered treifa, it's considered that he's going to die within the next 12 months, and if a person kills him, he's potter from Missa. Tosfos says this case is not similar to that. Tosfos doesn't elaborate why not, but the Rimi Gash says a reason is because by a treifa, there's an actual change in the person's body. There's something in his body. There's a hole where there shouldn't be or whatever, and therefore that's different than here where there's no change in the baby's body itself, just that the baby is falling off the roof and is going to be killed even if somebody is not there with a sword. Anyway, Plugta de Rabbi Hudim and Beseir of Rabbanan, that case will be subject to a machloikas of Rabbi Huda ben Beseira and the Chachamim, which we touched on earlier in the Masechta as well. The Tanya, we learn in a Blaisa. He kuhu asara bnei adam ba'asara machlois. If 10 people hit somebody with 10 sticks, so each person took a stick and beat him, bein b'vasachas, bein b'zachazeh, whether, and he died from it, bein b'vasachas, bein b'zachazeh, whether they all hit him at the same time or whether one after the other. So the Tanakama says, kolon p'turin, all of them are potter. Now, Rashi over here explains, because they're saying, the Pasuk says, v'ishkiyaka kol nefesh adam. If a person hits the kol nefesh of a person. Now, kol can mean all, or it can mean any. So the Chachamim are understanding the word kol to mean all. It has to be that the other person was killing the kol nefesh adam. So therefore, it's not, because by the time the other nine people have hit him, and therefore he's near death anyway. So only when he kills alone would he be chayev, but not in this case. Earlier in the Masechta, Rashi had said differently that it means because we don't really know which one of them is the one who actually killed him. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, I'm a Bezachazer. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says, I agree if it was the same time they were going to be potter, but if it was one after the other, Ha'achron Chayev, then the last one is Chayev, Mishakirav Misasai, because he brought the death closer, meaning that he understands Kol Nefesh Adam not to mean the entire Nefesh, but to mean any of the Nefesh. So even though by this time, by after 9 people had hit him, the guy is on the verge of death, nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says the 10th one who killed him, the 10th one who hit him and killed him is going to be chayim. Mipnei shekirav misasei, because he brought his death closer. Well, then applying that to our case over here, When Reuven throws the baby off the roof, then the baby was going to die anyway from as soon as it hit the ground. But now, meanwhile, Shimon came with his sword, and now the baby is dead a little bit sooner. So according to the Chachamim, both of them are going to be potter. According to, or maybe not both. Yeah, we're going to say that according to the Chachamim, we're going to say that both of them are going to be potter because neither one didn't do kol nefesh. According to them, Yehuda ben Maseda, the second one, Shimon, is going to be the one who's chayev because the fact is he's the one who killed the baby. Okay, another case. What happened again where Reuven threw the baby off the roof and then a shur came over there and the baby landed on the horns of the shur and was killed that way. So then and we're talking about over here where the shur was a muad. The reason why we have to mention that it's a muad is because we're going to be talking about koifer, and as we've discussed before, there's koifer only for a muad. We've looked before the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says that there's chatsi koifer for a tam. So fine, according to him, the question would be with a tam as well, but according to the Chachamim and the established halacha, that there's koifer only when a shur muad kills a person, then this case would have to be about a muad. Anyway, so plugged it, Rabbi Shmuel, v'noshe Rabbi Yechim, v'broke v'rabbanu. Then, whether the owner of the shur is going to be chayev is going to depend on a machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel, Benosha, Rabbi Yechon, and Breuka, and the Chacham. Like this, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says, V'nosan pidyon nafshay, the owner of the shur is paying the ransom of nafshay. Now, nafshay, whose soul, whose life? That means Dmei Nizek. So the Tanakama of this Braisa says, it means the value of the Nizek. In other words, what we do is we figure out how much would the nizek have been worth, like on the slave market or something, and then that's the amount that the owner of the shur is paying the heirs of the nizek. In effect, what he's doing is, like we talked about yesterday, it's like they have nowadays, lahavdil in American law, compensatory damages. You killed with your negligence someone who his lifetime earnings for his family plus the fact that they have a husband and father or whatever, the judges estimated, let's say, $1 million, and therefore that's the amount that has to be paid. So the same way we would do over here, says the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yechon ben Breuka, Dmei Mazik. And Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, says it means the value of the mazik, meaning, in other words, in effect, where he's saying the Torah is saying about the owner of the shur, the gamba olav yumas, the owner should be put to death. Now, the owner is not, in fact, put to death for his shur killing, but in other words, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that, in effect, the pasuk is saying he ought to be killed, but instead he's ransoming himself by paying his value. So therefore, it has to be his own value, dmei mazik. Well, then, therefore, the same machlokas will apply over here. Rashi explains that, again, in this case involving the baby, according to Rabbi Shmuel, then koifer is going to be paid. According to the Chachamim, then you have to say, look, the baby has no domim, has no value at this point, in the sense of that you can't figure out Dmei Nizek, because he would have been dead a moment later as soon as he hit the ground anyway, and therefore you can't be mechayev him Dmei Nizek. That's how Rashi learns. Rabbeinu Chananel actually learns it the other way around, and a number of Rishonim agree with Rabbeinu Chananel's explanation. It's the other way around, actually. Rabbi Shmuel, who says the Chachamim, who say that you have to pay Dmei Nizek, is going to say that, after all, look, the owner of the shur, your shur killed this baby. Yes, it would have been dead a moment later regardless, but the fact is your shur killed this baby, and therefore you have to be chayev koifer. According to Rabbi Shmuel, who said Dmei Mazik, then you can say, look, he's not the exclusive Mazik over here, because the fact is he didn't do anything. Usually the reason why the Torah gives him a break and makes him pay koifer is because he didn't do anything, his shur did. And here you could say that his shur didn't even really do anything, because regardless, the baby would have been dead regardless. The pashtus, I guess we have to say, in all these cases, we have to be talking about that it would have been a for sure thing that just the fall alone would have killed it. I mean, people have been known to survive long falls before. So I guess we have to assume that the scenario is that the ground underneath is such where for sure there's no question the baby wouldn't have survived the fall anyway. Anyway, so again, according to Rashi, the vote would be that the the that Rabbi Shmuel would require him to pay kofar in this case of the baby being thrown off the roof in the shur. According to Rashi, Rabbi Shmuel would make him pay kofar and the Chachamim would not. And according to Rabbi Nachman, all the other way around, the Chachamim would make him pay kofar and Rabbi Shmuel would not. Okay, another case. The Omar Rabba. Here's another din that Rabba says involving people falling or involving things falling off roofs. Nofo Merosh Hagag. If a person fell off a roof in a Ruach Mitsuya, we're talking about a normal wind, so it was careless of him then to be sleeping on the edge of the roof in the first place. V'nitka be'isha, and he fell down and got impaled into a woman. So there's a woman lying over there, and you know, again, you know, you're talking about a one in a million, maybe less chance that this would actually happen, that everything would line up, but it did somehow. And so he ends up basically inadvertently having relations with her. Chayev b'dalad dvarim. He will be chayev to be paying four of the five kinds of nezikin. Now, until now, when we learned on the previous Omud, when we used the expression dalad dvarim, what we meant is nezik is a given, and dalad dvarim would be the other four things, tzar, ripui, shevis, and boshes. Here it's the other way around. The Gemara is going to explain. Boshes he's actually potter from, because boshes you have to have intention, and here he didn't have intention. So rather, the four things over here mean the first four, nezek, tzar, ripui, and shevis. Obviously, not all of them might apply. There might conceivably not be any ripui. There might conceivably not be any shevis. But suppose there is. Suppose she was actually injured, then he's going to be chayev and up to, when we say four things, we mean really up to four things. The Rashba makes a point, by the way, it would have to be that she was already down there from before, otherwise, therefore, he's a Peshea by being up on the top of the roof in the first place. If she wasn't, then when he lay down over there to go to sleep, then he says it would be Potter, because it would be like the case that we've talked about before where a person is sleeping and then somebody else goes and puts Kalim next to him and so forth. By the way, this whole concept that a person is chayev for onus gomer, as Tosfos says, like we've learned previously, that if he was sleeping and somebody else put Caleb next to him and he broke them in his sleep, or somebody else came and lay down next to him and he injured that person in his sleep, Tosfos had said, we quoted a few times already, that he's potter for such things because it's an onus gomer. Not all Rishonim agree to that. There are, in fact, Rishonim who disagree and say that Amar brings it in Shulchan Aruch and says that he is, in fact, chayev even for onus gomer. Anyway, so according to that, it might not make a distinction whether the woman was downstairs at the time. Whatever the case, so he's chayiv in the four things. Ovir vimto leikana. Now, suppose this woman was his yavama, then he wouldn't have acquired her with that. Now, we learned in Yavamas, habal yavimto, when a person has relations with his yavama, whether it doesn't matter whether shogig or mezid or whatever, or even onus, then he's koine, but that's where at least he meant for some kind of bia. So we learned examples over there. He meant to have bia with his wife, for example, and it so happened that his yavama was there instead, and he didn't realize, and he ended up having relations with her. But here, he didn't have any intention of bia at all, so therefore he's not koine, and therefore, so Rashi brings the nafkamina of that, therefore, as we've learned in Yuvamis, if one of the other brothers were to do mimer with her, to give her kiddushin, then she's posel to him. We wouldn't say that, look, I had bia with her first, and therefore your mimer can have no effect. We wouldn't say that, because again, there was no intention for bia. What are the four things he's chayev? Chayev benezek b'tzav b'ripu yoshevis. Abba Boshes Loi. Now, however, the one that he's not going to be chayev for in this case is Boshes. Ditnan, because we learn later in the Masechta, Eina chayev ala Boshes ad jehe miskaven. He's not chayev for Boshes unless he actually intends to cause Busha, and here he does not intend because he fell off the roof. So therefore, no Boshes in this case. What about the Omer Rabba? Nofel Meresh Hagag Beruach She'ena Metsuya. What about if he fell off in an unusual wind? So a usual wind, we just said it was Peshea of him to be lying there near the edge of the roof where he could easily be knocked off by a wind. Now it was a Ruach She'ena Metsuya. Behizik Ubiish. If he, in falling, caused damage and he caused boshes to the other person. Many times, an injury to a person, or not even an injury, we're going to talk about on Omid Beis, let's say, for example, slapping a person or whatever, a lot of times there can be a boshes without other injury. right? You can have somebody goes over and slaps somebody else in the face. There's no nezek. Tsar, maybe there is a little bit. But let's say, for example, not even you could have where there's no tsar even. He does like a demeaning thing to him, like which doesn't really hurt, but it's embarrassing. So then he's chayav for boshes alone. So here he did both. He caused nezek to another person who was down, was down there on the ground, and he caused him boshes as well. So chayev al nezek or potter b'dalad varim. So he'll be potter in this case. In this case, he'll only be chayev for nezek, potter for all the other things, because this is already shogig or onus. And as we've learned before, we said adam mor la'olam, but that was only as far as nezek. As far as the other four things we learned yesterday, we learned tonet ve'chizkiya petza. So we said that he's chayev for nezek because the pasuk is petza tachas potza. So therefore, we learn from that he's chayev even b'shogeg or b'onus or what have you, but not the other things. The other things that he's intending to at least cause damage. On the other hand, beruach mitsuya. But if it was in a normal wind, like in the previous case for hizikul biyish, then if he caused nezek and he caused embarrassment, chayev b'dalad yonim or potter ala boshes. Then, like we said, he's going to be chayev only in the first four things and potter from boshes, because again, boshes is only when specifically he has in mind to embarrass. So, in other words, again, when he's chayev in the four things, because then it's poshe, because then it was careless of him to be so close to the edge of the roof where he could be knocked off. So therefore, that's enough to be mechayev him for the tsar and ripui and shemes. But boshes, it has to be that he actually intends to cause boshes, as we're going to learn in a minute. Vim this happeth. Now, if he turned himself over, meaning as he's falling, he's actually intending to fall on the other guy for his hana, meaning in other words that he would have hit the ground. So he would have gotten hurt. So instead, he wants to fall dafka on the other guy. So according to Rashi, in other words, it's not really so much that he intends to embarrass the guy, but he does intend to actually land on him. So in other words, at least in the previous case, he wasn't intending to land on the guy, but it was Peshea that he's in this position in the first place, as opposed to here, he intends to land on him. Rabbi Nachmanel says that actually he actually intended to cause damage. He actually intended, he sees that this guy is somebody he doesn't like anyway, and he figures, you know what, well, let me grab the opportunity and do that. So then, chayev afala boshes, then he will be chayev for boshes as well. Now, why is there this distinction? Why are we saying that boshes, it depends whether he had intention to or not? D'tanya, we learn in a b'raisa. Now, where do we know the concept of paying for boshes for anyway? So we have like this. The Torah tells us at the end of Parshas Ki Tse, you have a case where two people are fighting, and the wife of one of them comes to save her husband from the other guy. And the pasuk says, "V'shocha yada," she reaches out her hand, "V'achzika b'mavushav," and she grabs his private parts. And the next pasuk says, "V'katzoisa eskapa loisoches enecha," you should cut off her hand. You should not have rachmanus. Now there are actually two different meanings of that. V'katzoisa eskapa. One thing is the Gemara learns from it in Sanhedrin. We learn from that the concept of a roidif. Well, it's one of the sources where we learn the concept of a roidif. When she's grabbing a hold of him like that, she could cause him a serious life-threatening injury if she starts yanking. So therefore, so that would be that. That from there we learn that a roidif, you try to save him. You try to save not by killing lahatchila. You try to save him by wounding the person who's trying to harm him. So here, katzoy says kappa, you literally cut off her hand to prevent her from getting any further with that. However, another drasha that we say from that is that katzoy says kappa, just like ayin tachas ayin, doesn't mean you cut out his eye. The same with katzoy says kappa means you have to pay. And from that, we learn boshes, because there's no nezek and anything over here. We're just talking about there's the boshes. So therefore, the Tanya, we learn a b'raisa.
Anything she does, she's going to hurt him. So there's going to be also pain.
Well, it depends. If she starts yanking, yeah, there's going to be pain. But you could have, for example, when she just grabs him by the area, and it's embarrassing, but no more than that. You know, let's say, fine, he goes limp over there, or you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway. So Datanya, Mimash Mashinem of a Shocha Yoda. So it says she sticks out her hand, any adesh echazika. Obviously she grabbed. What's the point of sticking out her hand otherwise? So it could have just said Bashocha Yoda Bimavushov, Matamad Loim of Echazika. Why does it add the word Bachzika? It means Loim Aloch. It comes to tell you, once the person intended to cause damage, even if he didn't specifically intend the boshes, then we still have a chayiv him for the boshes as well. So again, the same thing over here. He intended to fall on the other guy, whether like Rashi says, just for his hana, so he doesn't fall and get injured himself, which is called, by the way, you have a concept we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta called Matzu Atzme Mamamin Chavera. You can have a case where a person is in danger, a personal bodily danger or danger to his mamun or whatever, and he saves himself by damaging somebody else's mamun. So we're going to talk about towards the end of the Masechta that a person is chayev for such a thing. He has a right to save himself, but he's still going to have to pay the other guy for the nezik to his thing. Imagine, for example, Moiser is something else. We're going to talk about Moiser in that. We're going to talk about Moiser in that connection as well. But no,
let's say, I'll kill you if you don't tell me.
Yeah, and that's something else. That's a case of a Moiser. We're going to talk about that at the end of the Masechta as well. But no, I'm talking about something else. You can have, let's say, to take a common example nowadays. Imagine, for example, a person is driving this car. And then all of a sudden, you know, you have like a, you know, he sees a deer in front of him. If he keeps on going, he's going to hit the deer and his car is going to be totaled and he's going to be badly injured. Instead, what he does is he swerves to the side and he hits a parked car there, let's say. So he's saving himself from a serious injury. But on the other hand, he did damage somebody else's property in the course of doing that. So then we say he's chayav to pay for that. Anyway, the point is that here he intended to cause damage, whether like Rashi, he didn't actually intend to cause hezek, but at least he intended to fall on the other guy. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, even more so, he actually intended to injure the other guy. Therefore, he's chayav for boshes, af pichlin eskav in labayish, even though he didn't specifically have the boshes in mind. So in the case, again, when he was on top of the roof and nitka be'isha, he had no intention to cause hezek at all. We're being mechayev him for the four things only because he was careless in being on the edge of the roof in a way where Ruach Metzuya could get him in the first place. Here we're talking about where not only that, he intended to land on the other person. So fine, in a parallel case, if he intended to land on her, then yes, he'd be chayev for boshes as well. V'omar Rabba. Then Rabba says, here's another din. Suppose that Reuven put a burning coal on Shimon's heart, Omes, and that killed Shimon, Potter, so then Reuven is Potter, because after all, Shimon could have removed the coal before it burned him. On the other hand, I'll big guy, but if he put it on Shimon's beged, the Nisraf, and the beged got burnt, Chayev, then Reuven is Chayev. I could say the same thing. Shimon could have removed the coal off his beged. He has a right to say that, look, I didn't bother because, fine, so my clothing will burn. I can always take Reuven to Beis Din afterwards and get paid for that, as opposed to, obviously, a person is not going to say, I'm going to be killed and allow my Yoshim to go and take the guy to Beis Din. Obviously, he's not going to do that. So Omar Rava Tarvaihu Tinani. So Rava points out, you know what, Rabbi, you didn't really need to say this befedosh. You can actually derive both of these from Mishnayas. Aliboy, where do we see that if he put the coal on the other person's heart, where do we see that he's potter? The Tanan. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Kovash all of the seichel ura the seichamayim. Suppose that Reuven goes and presses Shimon into fire or into water. The ene yochel lalis misham, and he can't get out of there. So either another. So for example, in the water, let's say, so Reuven held him underwater in such a way that he can't get out, or even he held him underwater long enough that he lost consciousness and now he can't get out anymore. Umes, and now Shimon died. Chayev, then Reuven is chayev for that. On the other hand, doch by the secha ura, the secha mayim, but if he only pushed him into the fire or the water, the yochalalis misham, and he could have gotten out of there, and in the event he didn't, omes, and then he died, potter, then Reuven is potter. He'll be chay b'dine shemayim, but he'll be potter b'dine odem, because Shimon had the ability to get out of there.
If he doesn't know how to swim, it's impossible for him to get out.
If it's impossible for him to get to swim, if it's impossible for him to swim, then I guess that would be considered like the first case. I don't know. Tosfos points out that actually, in the first case, we're saying kovash as a chidush, and in the second, dochboy is also a chidush. In other words, there's a chidush in each part of it in the first case, the essential thing is that he can't get out of there. So it doesn't really matter whether kovash or dochaf, but even Kovash, he's still chayiv. And in the second case, even Dochaf, he's still potter. Anyway, the Gemara discusses over there in Sanhedrin. The point is, Rava says, now you can derive Rabba's din from that. The same way as we're saying that if he pushed him into the fire and he could have gotten out, then Reuven is potter. The same way here, where Shimon put the coal on Shimon's chest and it ended up killing him, then Shimon could have removed it, and therefore Reuven is potter. Obviously, we have to be talking about where Shimon could have removed it. Obviously, if Shimon's hands are tied or something, then that's different. So that's the first din of Rabba, which we can derive from the Mishnah. big day, where do we, how can we derive Rabba's second din from a Mishnah? The Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah later in our Masechta, actually. If one person says to the other, Krask susi shabres kadi, rip my clothing or break my jug, chayev, and if the other guy does it, then he's still chayev. In other words, because just by saying break it or rip it, he's not saying you're going to be potter. He's saying you want to go ahead and break it or rip it, gesunte hate, but I still am reserving the right to take you to Beis Din. But if he says, almanas lifter, but if he says that I'm doing it, almanas, that you will be potter, then the other guy is potter. So the same way over here. In other words, what we mean is, so in the first case, we say he didn't intend to be moichel. He meant, fine, you want to go ahead and rip it, gesunte hate, but you're going to be going to Beis Din afterwards. The same way over here, Rava is saying, you can derive from that, that if Reuven put a coal on Shimon's clothing, and Shimon's clothing burnt, then Shimon has every right to say, the fact that I didn't take it off doesn't mean I was moichel. It means I figured I'm going to take Reuven to Beis Din afterwards. So it doesn't mean that he was moichel in that case. So now, boy Rabba. So now Rabba finishes off with a question. Hiniach gachelas alev avdoi mahu. What about if Reuven were to put the coal not on Shimon's body, but rather on Shimon's slave, who is now Shimon's slave? Now, what is the scenario? What are we talking about over here? What's the story with the slave? Rashi says it doesn't. Rashi says that the slave could have removed it, which implies that we're talking about that he's not that he's not tied up. On the other hand, Tosfos points out that we might be talking about where the slave is tied up, and we're not necessarily talking about, Tosfos says, in that case, we would have to say it's not that the coal killed the slave, but rather only injured him. So Mahu, what would be the din? The guf a dummy or come a mona dummy? Do we consider the Eved to be like the goof of the master, or do we consider him? And we just said before that if you put a coal on the goof of the master, then you're potter because he could have removed it right away. Or is it considered like his mammon, like we said, like with his beged, he'd be chayev. And he continues, imtim tzalem ke guf a dummy. If you're going to say that the Eved is considered like the goof of the master, then what about Shorei Mahu? What if he did the same thing with Shimon's shirt? So Hoder Poshta, later on, Rabba himself answered the question, Avde ki gufoi Shorei kamamone. The Eved is considered like his guf. So if he puts the coal on the Eved, on the Eved's chest, then according to Rashi, we're talking about the Eved is not tied up. Therefore, the Eved should have had the das to remove it. And if he didn't, then Reuven is potter for it. So we're talking about even that the Eved was killed. Shoda kamamone. On the other hand, the Shoda is considered like mamon, who it doesn't have the das to remove a coal, and therefore he'd be potter because he could say right. In the case of the Eved, he's potter. In the case of the Shoda, he's chayev. Yeah, because the other guy can say, Shimon can say, you know what, I didn't bother because look, I figured if my Shoda is killed, I you know it doesn't matter to me at this point. I'll just take Reuven to Beis Din and make him pay for a new Shoda. According to Tosfos, the case in the Eved would be talking about where the Eved is tied up and the master is standing nearby, and we're talking about that the Eved was injured. So again, would we say that the master can figure, look, he'll pay me for the damage, and we're saying that no, abdik gufoy, we don't say that. We're saying that the master is not moichel on that. We're saying that the master, we should have expected him to remove the coal right away, and if he didn't, then Reuven is potter. So you actually have, by the way, so here you have the Machloikas Rashi and Tosfos, how to understand the case. You have, it's also Machloikas similarly between the Rambam and the Raivan. The Rambam brings this halacha just as is, without distinguishing what the situation is of the Eved. Then the Raivan says we have to be talking about where the Eved is tied up. So it comes out that the Rambam agrees with Rashi's way of looking at it, that we're just talking about that the Eved perfectly could have removed it himself, and therefore he's potter, and the Shur, on the other hand, doesn't have the das to do that, and therefore he's chayev, whereas the Raivad holds like Tosfos and says that no, we have to be talking about where the Eved was physically incapable of removing it. The question is, why didn't the master remove it? So the Meiri actually says, even with the Shur, he says that even a Shur, if there's a burning coal on it, it's going to shake it off. So we have to be talking about a scenario, he says, where the Shur is not able to get it off. It's on a place on his body, let's say, where somehow he's not able to shake it off or something. So therefore, we can talk about that Reuven who put it there was Chayim. Okay. Hadron aloch keitzad. third perek now, Hameniach. Mostly in this perek, we're going to be dealing with nizokim that are caused by a person, which therefore is the continuation of what we're learning here at the end of the second perek about nizkei adam. At the end of it, it's going to talk about a little bit about nizokim of a sure one to the other. And that's going to lead us into the fourth perek, which will do the fourth, which will talk much more about dinim of oxen and their nizokim. So the Mishnah says, "Hameniach is a kad b'Rishos HaRabim." If somebody put a jug in Rishos HaRabim, jugs in most kalim in those days were made out of earthenware. Now, why is he putting it over there? So different Rishonim talk about, are we talking about that he put it there, let's say, because he's tired and he put it down a little bit to relax, or are we talking about that? Or are we talking about that even not? We're talking about that it's we're talking about a regular. It's a place where it's a regular thing where people often put down kalim. We'll talk about that a little bit on other days. Anyway, uva achav nitkoba. If somebody else walks by and trips over the kalim, the shavra, and he breaks it, potter, then he's potter for paying for the keli. Why is that? We'll see in the Gemara.
That was
definitely... doesn't know, because we're talking about b'shur sadam. The bur is the jug is considered a bur. Bur yuchayev in b'shur sadam. But so now the person who put the jug over there is chayev for the nizakin, as the Mishnah continues. V'im buzak ba, if he gets injured by it, ba'al chavis chayev b'nizgay, then the owner of the barrel is chayev for the nezak of the other person because it's the bur. By the way, we've learned before that bur yipotur for Adam. We've learned in the first parak that bur yuchayev only for shor v'lo Adam, chamor v'lo kalim. We'll learn about it in more detail in the fifth parak. That applies when the person was killed. But if the person was injured by your bur, then yes, yuchayev.
Doesn't matter if the bur goes in or the bur is on top.
Nah, so that's what we learned in the first parak that every av nezikin has at least one tulda. And in the case of bur, the tulda of it is any kind of obstacle that you make in Rosh Hashanah that a person or an animal could get injured or killed by. So the same way as a bur, yeah, which goes 10 tefachim deep, the same way you have over here something that sticks up above the ground. Later on in the fifth parak, we're going to talk about the details, just how tall does the thing have to be. The same way as we say a bur has to be 10 tefachim deep to kill an animal, does that mean the obstacle has to be at least 10 tefachim tall for the animal, that if the animal is killed, that you're chayev? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that later in the Nun's Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, right now, though, so we're talking about, so yeah, tulda of bur is putting something in Rosh Hashanah where somebody will trip over it. So here, the one who tripped over it, if he broke it, is potter for reasons that we're seeing in the Gemara. The one who put the barrel over there is chayev because he made a burr over there. So the Gemara asks, posach b'kad v'siyim b'chavis. You have the Mishnah is starting with the word hamaniach as a kad, where a kad means a small jug, and then it finishes off ba'al chavis, the owner of the barrel. So why is that? And we have other examples in our Masechta with the same kind of thing. Later on in our Perek, we have an example where the Mishnah describes Zebab Chavise v'Zebab Kerasa. Reuven is coming, walking down the street with his barrel. Shimon is coming in the opposite direction with his beam, carrying on his shoulder. Nishbra Kadish Alzeb Kerasa Alzeb. And the one person's Reuven's cad, his jug, was broken on the beam of the other one. So either they banged into each other. We'll see about the details of that later on, and Daflam and Aleph Be'ez Hashem. Anyway, Potter, so we say he's Potter with the details that we'll describe over there. The point being, because both of them have a right to walk in Rosh Hashanah, and therefore each of them, therefore the owner of the jug ought to have been careful. Again, Pasek B'chavis, we see in Makad. So here it's the other way around. You're starting with the word Chavis, and you're finishing off with the word Kad. So what is it? Because a kad is different than a chavis. A kad is a smaller jug, like you have, for example, by Rivka, where she's carrying a kad of water, she's not carrying a whole chavis, she's not carrying a whole barrel. A barrel is much larger. So what is it? Utnanami, and then we have a Mishnah at the end of our Masechta talking about this, a point related to what we were saying before about matzalatim and mamon shachaveroi. This is actually a related case, not exactly the same thing, but whatever. Zebab chavisa shoyayim. Reuven is walking along the street carrying a barrel of wine. The zebab kadesh shol dvash. The other one, Shimon, is coming along carrying a jug of honey. Nistika chavis shol dvash. Now the barrel of honey, the jug of honey. Again, we're going from chavis to kad. The jug of honey developed a crack. So now the honey is about to spill out. So Reuven has Rachmanus, the Shofach Zeyena, he spills out his wine, the Hitzel said Vashla Seichai, and he saves the honey He tells Shimon, go ahead and put your honey into my barrel so it doesn't so it doesn't get lost. So do we say that does Shimon have to pay for all the wine? No, all Reuven is entitled for is his pay for the tircha that he did, but not for the wine, as we'll learn. And at the end of the Masechta, this is on like Deft Kuf Tesvav or so, so we'll learn about it in a few months, best Hashem, why exactly he doesn't get the value of the wine. Anyway, so again, Posach Bachat, Bekan, Basim Bachavis. So again, there you have, where he's beginning with the word kad and ending with the word chavis. So why do we have this? Given that a kad and a chavis are two different things, why is the Mishnah interchanging between them? Amar Papa, hainu kad, hainu chavis. So the Papa says, because in fact, they are considered the same thing, even though, of course, they're different sizes. L'may nafkimin l'mecha chomemper. And that would be relevant as far as buying and selling. No, we're still on the same Amar. It's relevant as far as buying and selling, meaning, in other words, that if somebody is buying a chavis and the other guy gives him a kad, he can't say that's not right, that's not what I paid for, because we're saying two words are interchangeable. And in fact, that would be, now why is the Mishnah saying this over and over again? Why do we have three different Mishnayos that use these expressions? So in fact, the Rashba explains that the Mishnah is just telling us that the Tana is not even being precise about it. The Tana is basically saying that, look, because the two of them are interchangeable in human conversation, therefore I don't care whether I'm starting a Mishnah with one and using it with the other. So it's not really like we have to find a Chiddush in each of these three Mishnayas. It's just that's the style of speaking. So the Gemara asks, Hey Chidami. But what's the scenario? If you're talking in a place where people don't interchange these expressions, they call a kad, a small one, they call the big one a chavis, well then holei korula, so they don't call it. So of course, if a person bought a chavis and instead they give him a kad, then he has a right to complain. So the answer is loy tzricha, yes, but the chiddush of the Mishnah and of what Rav Papa is saying is talking about the ruba korol of kada or chavisa. Most people use the proper terminology. The ikanami de korol chavisa kada or kada chavisa, but then there are some people who interchange them. Maud tema zil bosa ruba. So you would think you go according to the roy. Kamash Milan, the Ein Hochen Mammon, Acha Roy. Therefore, the Mishnah is telling us that no, when it comes to Mammon, you don't go according to the Roy. When you have a suffix like that, you don't say. Rashi brings another example from later in the Masechta where a person sells a shur to somebody else, and it turns out that the shur is one that habitually gores. So we don't say. So now can the buyer say, you know what? Most people buy oxen in order to use them for plowing. I can't use an ox that's wild like that for plowing. So give me back my money, and you take back your ox. We say not necessarily. We can say I'm motzi mechaver l'varaya. The other guy can say, as far as I'm concerned, you might have bought it for shechting, and in that case, it doesn't matter whether it's wild or not. So that's an example of Ein Hochen Mammon Acharoi. Now, Tosfos, first of all, points out over here that, look, what are we talking about over here? Shouldn't we look and see how much he paid? If he paid the value of a kad or if he paid the value of a chavis, and go according to that. So Tosfos says, first of all, you could be talking about, now later on in the Masechta, actually, and in Baba Basra, we're going to be talking about this point, we talk about this point of whether we say hadamim modiim. Can you say that if somebody, but that if that that that, that you go according when you're talking about over there? For example, you have machlokas in Baba Basra. Somebody sells a tsemed, which means a pair of oxen. Does that mean that he automatically includes the oxen themselves, or does maybe tsemed only mean the yoke that yokes them together? You have machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Nachachamim about that. Rabbi Yehuda says hadamim modiim. Look at the price. If he paid the price of a yoke plus two oxen, obviously, he meant the oxen as well, and otherwise not. And the chum say in adomim raya. Tosfos says that's not really relevant over here. Here, the chumim would agree that adomim raidim, but first of all, because we're not talking about separate things, but still, Tosfos says you could be talking about, first of all, where the kad and the chavis are pretty close in price, so therefore you can't say hadamim madim, because you could say, let's say it's $10 for one and $11 for the other, so it's below the threshold of ayna, and there's not that much of there's not enough of a difference really for us to be able to say definitively it was one or the other. Or Tosfos says you could say, let's say he said, I want to buy from you 200 zuz worth of kadim. Well then, 200 zuz worth of chavis. Well then, either way, he's getting 200 zuz worth of product. The question is he getting larger chavias or smaller kadim? Then there's no hadam in my din. Anyway, so that would be the scenario over here. Then Tosfos also says, what do you mean ein hochin b'mamon acha roiv? When it comes to din nefashis, we go according to roiv. Why shouldn't we go in din mamonas according to roiv? And so Tosfos, so Tosfos' answer is because when it comes to the dayanim, really what it is when we have a majority vote, we consider the miut as though it didn't exist at all. So therefore, it's not even a matter of roiv versus miut. It's a matter of you have, that's it. Once you have the roiv, then that's it. Their opinion is binding. As opposed to over here, we're talking about where the miut actually exists. The Shev Shmaitza actually brings something from the Ramban to further explain this. He says that there can be a difference of a roiv. There can be a difference of a roiv that depends on somebody's behavior. For example, the example that Rashi gave, where a person is buying an ox, where he could be buying it for plowing versus for shechting. So that depends on a person's behavior. So a person always has the choice, even though it's only a myriad of people who buy oxen for shechting them. The fact is, any individual person could choose to follow that way of doing things. And the same way in other examples, the same way over here. Yes, most people call a kad, and a chavis, but after all, you have some people who don't, and therefore that's a matter of human behavior, and therefore you have a right to say that maybe the other guy is not doing that way, as opposed to if it's a roiv that depends on the nature of things or different things like that. We've learned before about ruba de ise kamon versus ruba de lesse kamon, a statistical roiv versus an actual roiv that we see. Then we wouldn't necessarily apply this concept. Okay. Anyway, the point is that therefore that is why the Tana interchanges the words kad and chavis in order to stress this point.
Here it doesn't make a difference.
Some people call that's what we're saying, because we're talking about a place where some people interchange the words and call a kad a chavis and a chavis a kad. Therefore, if you say, to give Tosfos a second example, I want to buy 200 zuz worth of chavis from you, and instead the guy gives him 200 zuz worth of kadim, then he doesn't have a basis to complain. Okay. The Mishnah had said, we said that if Reuven put his jug down there in Chesed Abim and Shimon passed by and broke it, so we said he's Potter. Am I Potter? Now the question is, why is Shimon Potter? Shouldn't he be paying attention where he's going? So fine. The fact that Reuven is chayev if Shimon gets injured, fine. That there's no problem. Reuven created a burr over there. But why is Shimon Potter if he broke the barrel? Why shouldn't he be paying attention where he's going? Tosfos brings up over here a point that we learned a few days ago, that Tosfos had said, you have to be more careful not to cause a nezek than to not be the victim of a nezek. So therefore, the Gemara is wondering, why isn't Shimon responsible to make sure that he's not a mazik and that he's not breaking these barrels as he walks?
You don't have time to see this.
Well, that's the question. So then why not? So we have a few different answers. Amri debei Rav Mishmei de Rav. In the yeshiva of Rav, they said in the name of Rav, the reason is b'mamale reshus Rav and kulachovius, because the case is where Reuven didn't just put down one barrel. He put down a whole bunch of barrels blocking the whole reshus Rav. So there's no way for Shimon to go through except by moving some of the barrels. And so if he ends up breaking, so if he ends up breaking some of the barrels in the course of moving them, then he's potter. Shmuel, I'm about Afela Shanu. Shmuel says we're talking about it was in the darkness, so he couldn't see where he was going. Rabbi Yochanan, I'm about Keren Zavis. Rabbi Yochanan says we're talking about it's around a corner. So you have, imagine one person is walking up Kingston Avenue and turning onto Montgomery, and somebody put a barrel right there around the corner where he can't see, and he bangs into the barrel and breaks it. So you can't be mechayiv, and you can't say you should have looked where you're going because you couldn't have seen it at the last second. Yeah. So Omer Papa. So the Papa points out, Loi deka masnisin ela oikishmul oikirabyechnan. When you look at the actual wording of the Mishnah, you actually find it seems to work better only according to Shmuel or according to Rabbi Yechanan. Shmuel that was in the darkness, or Rabbi Yechanan that was around the corner. De'ikirav, because if you're following Rav and saying that you're talking about where the whole Rosh Hashanah Rabim was blocked with barrels, my iryan nitkal, why mention the case where Shimon tripped over it and broke? Who are din after the shavar? Wouldn't the same din apply even if he broke them b'kavana, nami also? Because since there's no way of passing without breaking them, or without at least moving them, which then they might break, So then he should be potter for that alone. The fact that the Mishnah uses nitkal suggests more like Shmuel and like Rabbi Yechanan that we're talking about he was unable to avoid it. Now, to be sure, it doesn't contradict Rab because after all, it is more usual to trip over it than to break it be a dime. But still, Rav Papa is pointing out that if the meaning was like Rab, then the Mishnah should have said the bigger chiddush that even if shavar, even if he broke them be a dime, then he would be potter. However, Omer Zvid Mishmei the Rabba, who I didn't after the shavar. Actually, no, you could say the Mishnah is implying that even if he broke them be a dime, he would be potter. Bahai the Katani Nitkal, the only reason the Mishnah says that he tripped, because the Mishnah wants to continue that if he got injured by the broken pieces, then the Balabayas, the owner of the Chavis, is Bal Chavis Chayev Benizkoy, then the owner of the Chavis is Chayev for his injuries, the Davka Nitkal. And that would apply, says Reb Zvid, only if Shimon had tripped over it. So therefore, it's not his fault that the broken pieces were there, and therefore that he got injured by them. Avol shavar Lloyd, but if he had broken them, now fine, in Rab's scenario, he has every right to break them, but then Reuven can say that I'm not chayiv if you get injured by those broken pieces that you yourself broke. My timer, who da azik anafshe, because then we can say that Shimon caused the hezek for himself, because after all, he didn't have to break the barrels. Even in Rab's scenario, where he has to get through, he could move them without breaking them. So therefore, if he chooses to break them in order to clear the path, then now if he trips over them himself and gets injured by them, or a piece goes flying or whatever, and he gets injured, then Reuven can tell him that's your own fault. Fine, and you're not chayev to pay for my barrels. I agree, I shouldn't have blocked Rishus Rabin with them. But on the other hand, I should be potter for your nezakin because you didn't have to break them either. So therefore, even then, so according to that way of looking at it, then the Mishnah does have to use the word nitkal, even though it doesn't fit so well according to Rab, because otherwise the rest of the Mishnah wouldn't fit. Therefore, katani resha nitkal, so therefore the resha uses the word nitkal. Now, so far we have three understandings of our Mishnah. Are we talking about where the whole Rosh Hashanah Rabbah was blocked? Are we talking about where it was at night and it was dark? Or are we talking about where it was around the corner? So now the Gemara continues. Rab Abba says to Rab Ashi, you should know, they say in the west, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rab Ula, or on the side over here, it says Rab Eloi. Anyway, there's a fourth reason why you should pop there. Doesn't matter whether it was around the corner or in the darkness or whatever. In general, it's not usual for people to be watching what's on the road. So therefore, even if it's in broad daylight, even if it's in the middle of the street or whatever, if he trips over it, we can potter him because he's not expected. He's not expected to look so carefully at what's in front of him in the street and to make sure not to bang into him. Tosfos points out that later on, the Gemara says later in the Masechta, when it talks about a burr, that a shur usually does notice where it's going, but the difference is a shur's head is facing downward, so its eyes are pointed downward, so therefore it's more easily going to be able to see such things. So that's the difference. So like we have in Hayom Yom, you know, it's a great chesed that the Eibishter did with a person, and he makes him stand upright so he can look at Shemayim, as opposed to an animal can only look down at the ground. A couple of other Rishonim give other reasons. The Rashba says a person is always thinking, so therefore you can say he's thinking, and therefore he's not looking so carefully where he's going, whereas a shur can't think. And then he says another reason. There we're talking about a burr, which is a permanent fixture in Rosh Hashanah, and there's a coil for it, so everybody knows it's there, as opposed to here we're talking about somebody put down a cat as a one-time thing, and therefore there's no coil about it. Okay, anyway. So the Gemara says, "Have a uvda b'nahauda v'chi of Shmuel." It happened once in Nahauda that such a person, banged into a chavis and broke it. V'chi of Shmuel, and Shmuel made him pay for the nezek. But Pumbedissa v'chi of Rava, and the same thing happened in Pumbedissa, and Rava said he's chayim. So why is that? Shmuel, we understand why he did that, because he holds like his shitta. He says only if it was in the darkness would he be potter. It wasn't in the darkness, it was in broad daylight. So therefore Shmuel would say that he's chayev, he should have watched where he's going. Do we have to say that Rava necessarily holds like Shmuel? Or is there a possibility that maybe there's another reason why Rava passed in this way? So Amar Papa, the Papa says, in fact, there is. Counted the acts, Rabbi, having in this particular case that Rava was dealing with, It was a corner near where they press olives. Now, what happens is, Rashi describes, you have people, it's the olive pressing season. People are coming to the Beis Abad to press their olives. Now, before Hanukkah time, you have those little ones that they do all over the place with the kids, but whatever. Sometimes the place is crowded, so not everybody has a chance to get in at once. So you have people waiting outside with their barrels or with their jugs, because after all, they have to have something to put in the oil after they finish. So they're putting them down, and they have a right to put them in Rishas Rabim because it's a known thing that people are going to be doing that. So counted atzrahavi the kibin de Rishus Ka'avdi. In this particular case, people have every right to be putting their barrels in Rishus Rabim while they're waiting for their turn in the Beis Abad. Therefore, in this particular case, he knows that there's likely to be things in Rishus Rabim, and therefore it's his responsibility to pay attention. So yes, the Amri B'mar Rava would say that usually a person is not responsible for doing that. But now, in a case where he knows that there were going to be certain obstacles in Rishus Rabim because it's the season for them, then it's his responsibility to look out for them.
If he has a trip and get hurt, then
he has a taina to the other guy. Well, does he have a taina because you created a burr? Maybe, I don't know. But the point is, we're saying that at least he's chayev to pay for the nezek if the barrel breaks. Whether he'd have the right to complain, and then or whether he'd have the right to be paid for his nezokin, maybe not necessarily. Maybe the other guy could tell him that you were careless. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to talk. Now the Gemara is going to get into a concept called Ovid Inish Dinel Nafshe. When do we say that a person is entitled to judge the din for himself and to take something away from the other guy in payment of something that the other guy owes him without even going to Beis Din? That's going to relate to this that we said before, that when you have to pass through the Rishus Rabim and there are barrels over there, you'd be entitled to break them. So the Gemara starts off. Sholach le Rav Chista le Rav Nachman. Rav Chista sent one time a message to Rav Nachman asking him as follows. Harei Omru, now we know the Chachamim said there are certain kinds of cases where one person hits somebody else and the Chachamim established standard rates that he has to pay for the injury or the embarrassment over there. Harei Omru, l'rechuva sholosh. If somebody kicks somebody else with his knee, so if he bangs his knee into the other person, sholosh, then he has to pay him three sloim. So that would be it's going to be, Rashi says it's for boishes. There are other mafreshim who say that maybe even if there's nezek or whatever involved, then it would cover all of that as well. Maybe it means three for the boishes plus maybe whatever else. So Rashi says it means for the boishes. The Rif adds it's also for the tsar. And now we're not talking about in case there should have to be ripui or sheves. Then the Rosh points out you can't give a fixed value for those. Obviously, those are going to depend on circumstances. But at least the three sloim is meant to cover the boishes and the tsar if there is any tsar. Anyway, so that's a little chuva. That's if he knees him. V'lebeita chomish, if he actually kicked him with his foot, then he's paying five sloim. Or the snukras shloishes, right? And if he does a snukras, then he's paying 13 sloim. What is snukras? Rashi explains it means he took a saddle of a donkey and hit the other guy with it, which is a tremendous boishes. There are several different other understandings among Rishonim what snukras means. The Rambam explains that it means he punched him with a fist. And then there are a few different other explanations. Anyway, so then he paints 13 sloyim. So now Rav Chista asks Rav Nachman, Lepanda demara, what if somebody hits somebody with a handle of a shovel, or the kopina demara, or he hit him with the blade of the shovel? My, how much is he paying for that? How much is he paying for the boshas and the tsar for that? Sholach lei, so Rav Nachman says, what are you doing? Chista, knosa ko magus v'bavel. You're living in Babel. Are you trying to collect a knas over here? These kinds of things, a knas. You don't do dine knosis in Babel because you need smicha, ish mi piyish. And such smicha is not given in Babel. You, Rav Chista, don't have smicha because that's why he's Rav Chista and not Rabbi Chista. The rule is Rav means he didn't get smicha and Rebbe means he does. Rav Chista lived his whole life in Babel, yeah. So what are you trying to collect knas in Babel? Tosfos says that actually technically maybe these things are not considered knas. But later on in the Masechta, the Gemara is going to explain that what it is nowadays when Bote Dinim don't have the original smicha ish mi piyish, or back then when they didn't in Babel, they're allowed to judge common cases So cases of knosis for sure are out. The cases of chatzi nezek for keren, for example, the 30 sloim for an eved being killed, oinas mefata, all those things. But on top of that, also the Gemara explained that only things that are regularly happen, plain old nezakin or things like that, then bate dinim outside Eretz Yisrael are capable of judging, because in effect we're doing it as a shluchus, the bate dinim in chutz laaretz, so the bate dinim nowadays are doing it as the shluchim of the ones in Eretz Yisrael. But not uncommon things. So therefore, this is uncommon, and therefore, but the dinim and chutz laaretz can't judge them. So therefore, he says to Rav Chista, "What are you thinking? Why are you trying to collect it in Bavel anyway?" Emily easy gufun de'ovda hechihava. But he says, "Tell me easy what exactly happened to you." Easy, there's different explanations whether it means my friend or whether it means now, like you'd say in English. So tell me. So the easy would be like so. Or is it that Izzy means my friend? So tell me what exactly happened over here. Why are you even asking the question? Sholach Leis, Rav Chista said, what happened was like this. Dahu gagusa that debetre. There was a well, not a well, there's a pit of water that belonged to two people where they both use it for irrigating their fields. The deal was they're going to take turns, one day off, one day on. Each day, one of them is going to have the right to take water from it. So Sunday, Reuven, Monday, Shimon, and so forth. One day, Reuven shows up on a Monday and wants to take the water, even though it's not supposed to be his day. So Shimon says, today is my day. And Reuven didn't pay attention. So Shimon took a handle of a shovel and hit the other guy to get him away. So therefore, sort of Chista is saying, so now this is a case of Tsar and Boshas. So now we need to know, fine, we can't collect Knossos and Bavel, but let's say he were to grab Nechosim to pay for it, and then we can't take it away from him, then I need to know how much the payment would be. Omalei, sort of Nachman, says to Rav Chista, you know what, that's a different case. Mea pandi bepandi limchie. He could go and hit him 100 times with that shovel if he needs to get him away, because the other guy is stealing from him. Even according to the opinion, which the Gemara is going to present the machlokas in a minute, that a person is not allowed to make a din for himself. He has to, you have something, somebody else is taking something of yours or whatever. Don't go and grab it back from him, take him to Beis Din. In this case, mokum pseida, but where there's a hefset involved, ovid inish din al-nafshe, then yes, a person could do a din for himself. In this case, he's causing a hezek, because after all, meanwhile, by the time he gets into Beis Din, the other guy's going to draw a lot of water, and there's not going to be enough water left in him for the next day. Or he might not even know how much there was in there and to be able to figure out how much he has to pay him, whatever. So in that case, everybody would agree that Ovid Inish Dinla Nafshe. So therefore, yes, he has every right to go and hit the guy if necessary in order to prevent him from doing that. As in fact, we have a machlokas about that. Rabbi Yehuda omaloi ovid inish din l'nafshe. Rabbi Yehuda says, in such a case, you have a complaint against somebody else. Don't do a din for yourself. Take him to Beis Din. Rabbi Nachman omaloi ovid inish din l'nafshe. So the Gemara points out exactly that. Hecha de ikka pseida, where there is a monetary loss by the time he gets the guy to Beis Din. Kol amaloi pligi de ovid inish din l'nafshe. Then everybody will agree that he can do that, that he can stop the other guy. Ki pligi hecha de leka pseida. The machlokas would be, there's no hefsid right now, but he wants to prevent him from continuing to do it or whatever. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yavidich din el nafshe, given the lek of seder, since there's no loss, lezo kamei dayana, just go to the Beis Din and then get the guy to pay through the legal process. Rabbi Nachman Omer, omer inish din el nafshe, given the bedin ovad, because given the bedin ovid, since after all, he is acting in accordance with the din, and of course he has to be very sure that he is acting in accordance with the din, which is maybe not so simple, but whatever, when he is, lo tarach, you don't have to be matriachim to go to Beis Din. So we're going to continue talking about this point about Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshe tomorrow, Best Hashem. The halacha is in the end, like Rav Nachman, that Ovid Inish Din L'Nafshe, there are some criteria about it. Again, it doesn't have to be that Ika Pseida right now. It could be that there isn't, but there are a number of criteria about it that are in order for a person to be able to do it. For example, it has to be that it has to be that if he's doing something that's going to damage the other guy's property, that it's the easiest way to do things, rather than, for example, there would be an equally easy way to do things. One example that I saw an example on the website, the Business Halacha Institute. Suppose somebody is parked in your parking space, So if he didn't leave a paper over there with his number, then fine. You can say it would be a hassle to go figure out whose car it is. So then you're entitled to go call a tow truck and have him towed. But if, let's say, he left a paper over there, and it'd be just as easy to call him as it would be the call to call the towing company, then you're responsible to call him rather than doing that. So that would be an example. You don't say they're over dinner shdinim lamafshe because it's just as easy to do one or the other. So we'll talk about more of these dinim tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
That's great. He's a one of my
Okay.